with episode 836 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and welcome to the Critical Myth Library.
That's right. It almost feels that way sometimes, this first one. Yeah, because as usual, we are kind of falling into a little bit of a pattern here, which is nothing bad. Just that our first show tends to be what we've been up to, whether we've been watching movies, reading books, playing games, and so on. So it does tend to be us talking about everything but TV, or at least everything but episodic discussion. And then we usually have one or two shows later in the week that cover the shows that have been on throughout the week, the weeks, rather, that we tend to be off lately. But yeah, we are back, and we have quite a few things to talk about here. Yeah, I think that it's going to be a thunderously wonderful show. What do you think, Gary?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely going to be... we'll be lighting up the skies with our discussion.
That's right. Time to give them hella. Anyway, I believe that there's usually some kind of disclaimer.
Yes.
We're going to talk about something that's in the
news. Yes, as we discuss both television, books, and even movies in some cases, such as tonight, we will be spoiling them. We will be discussing how people lived, how people died, how the story ended, how everyone rode off into the sunset, or sun at least. And we don't do this to harm anyone, but rather to keep our discussion both topical and informative and all-encompassing in, as we broach various subject matter. So if, as we start to discuss something, if you haven't seen or read it, you might want to pause us. If not, dive in and have a good time with us.
Indeed. So let's go ahead and start with a movie. What did you see recently, Gary?
Oh, I just saw. I just was at the movie theaters last night. I actually saw Casablanca. Are you familiar with it?
That one's a little new. I don't know if I've seen it yet.
Well, you know, they're trying this cool black and white format. You know, I don't know if it's going to catch on or not. You know, people are kind of hooked on color nowadays, but you never know. You might get a throwback once in a while. No, actually, it was the 75th anniversary screening of Casablanca, and I'll keep this short because obviously it's quite dated material. But it's a load of fun to see a movie outside of a television screen, regardless of what 42, 46, or 84-inch plasma screen TV you might have on your wall. It's still rather enjoyable to grab a little box of popcorn and sit with fans of a property and watch it all together on a big screen. So I took out the whole family, actually, and everybody enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. It was very almost church-like in the people's intent listening to make sure that they catch every line said and watch every joke, wink, and cringe that occurred during the course of the movie. And so definitely a lot of fun, lots of clapping at the end, and it was really enjoyable. It's a movie I usually watch at least once a year with the family. Regardless, it's one of my favorites, so to see it on the big screen was even extra pleasure for me. So, but I don't think that's quite the movie you were talking about, was it, John?
No, but I completely understand, because I think that was probably one of those Fathom event things, wasn't it?
Yet another one. They are getting my money a lot lately.
Yes, they are, right? Because we actually saw another of those films for Fathom Events. Once again, me and the Spawn went out to go see one of the Studio Ghibli Festival 2017 films. This time it was Spirited Away. Now, it was the first time that my son had actually seen it, and it was on the big screen, so he was really happy to see it. It was the Japanese version with subtitles.
Okay, yeah, that's why you beat me to it.
Yep. And yeah, it was a really good time. And like you said, going to a movie where, okay, everybody's probably seen it a couple times at least, and everyone's a fan, and it's not a crowd of newbies necessarily, but a lot of people who are really there because they're already established, have an established interest. It's just a completely different crowd, and it's usually very reverent, you know. Everybody's waiting for the funny lines to come or for the big moments to hit, and everyone's just there to have a good time, so... It's not always like, you know, sometimes when you go to movies these days, like blockbusters especially, you get the people who are on their phones or running commentary in the background, and it does get a little irritating. But it was really nice to be, it's really nice going to these films where it's more of a special occasion, and you're really just getting the crowd that really wants to be there. So, yeah, I agree. That was, that Fathom Events continues to get a lot of both of our money, to say the least. But the other movie that we are talking about this week is a little indie film. I don't know if many people have heard about it. I think it's an import from Scandinavia.
Yeah, these art house films really. You know, they're hard to find once in a while, but they're usually worth it.
That's right. This one really brought it. Thor Ragnarok.
Some religious film or something like that.
You know? In some senses, yes. Yep. I'm sure for some people, it was a religious experience of sorts. But yes, wow, the latest of the MCU films, and I have to say, this rivaled the Guardians movies for funniest Marvel film, and just pure pleasure of just sit back. I wouldn't even necessarily say turn your brain off, but just kick it into a different gear for a while and just enjoy yourself.
Okay. What was your favorite moment? Did you have like a moment that's sticking your, I know there's several that were enjoyable, but did you have like one that sits there?
There's two that are a tie. Okay.
Okay.
Spoilers. The moment when Loki was sitting with the Grandmaster and the Hulk was smashing Thor around and he was just, he got up on his feet. He says, yes, that's what I'm talking about. How do you,
that's how it felt. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
It was great. The other moment that really got me was towards the end when Banner is in the ship and he's like, okay, this is my moment. Here I go. And he goes to throw himself on the bridge as the Hulk and he just goes flop and bounces off the ground. Oh, man. The entire theater was roaring in laughter when that happened. And that's the kind of absurd moment that moments that were in this movie, but it was like constantly... The way that I described it, Gary, to somebody, because they were kind of like, I don't know if I really liked it.
You know, it wasn't like the previous Thor movie.
Right. And I was like, but you have to understand, if you pay attention to the beginning of the movie even, this basically is Thor telling the story. Mm-hmm. And doesn't this feel like the kind of story that Thor would tell when he's rip-roaring drunk with a bunch of Vikings or something, or a bunch of people in a bar? And this is the way he'd tell the story. He'd make the villain pretty much, like, very thin, and he'd completely focus on the heroics that were taking place. And the funnier moments. And it just felt like basically this was Thor telling a story.
Yeah.
And it was so much better for it.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely agree. And that's a good way to look at that, the point of view. For me, I have to say, they teased it in the previews, of course. But when, you know, Banner's asking, when he finds out about the fight between him and Thor, oh, how do we do? And, oh, I won. And then even Banner's like... Yeah. Are you sure about that? Oh yeah, most definitely. Yeah, it was that was really good. And the breathtaking scene for me was that scene where they're showing the destruction of the Valkyries when they're pouring on the Pegasus through the clouds in the sky in the dark and stormy sky. It was like a painting come to life. It was I'm not sure how you describe that effect more so than that, but it was really amazing and just you know just almost froze time for a second as it just captured my attention so much as that the whole scene was going on. And as best I could tell, we did get to see at least the people that most people, comic book people, would think is the Valkyrie. I believe that was Brunhilde getting stabbed through.
Ooh, yeah, that did seem like it, right? Because so, it was the prototypical or archetypical blonde.
Yes. So, but that scene was just cinematically was you know so visually impressive. It still sticks with me how awesome that was.
Yeah, it's definitely. I think that some people were looking to see if this was maybe going to have to, or would turn out to be the one movie that didn't kind of work for the MCU, because everyone keeps waiting for one to fail.
Yes.
I think in some degrees they tried to retroactively downplay even Age of Ultron, because I mean, that is a film with some problems, but they really try to make them sound so much worse than they are, in my opinion, just to try and knock it down. Because they're like, one of these films has to be horrible, right? And yet, each one that comes out, they're continuing to really nail it.
Well, they definitely went with a different type of story structure as you're for this versus the previous Thor movies. So, you know, that was enjoyable. Some people feel they went over the top. Was this so ludicrously, you know, funny that it was just, you know, it just pushed things too far? I thought this was definitely funnier than the second. You know, if we want to consider the Guardians of the Galaxy movies to be the humor movies of this universe, I felt this one at least beat number two easily, and might even give the first one a slight run for its money. Felt like they really went for humor above and beyond, you know, a typical Thor movie, especially with some of the dark concepts that we had in here. We had you know, Loki somewhat responsible, at least so it seemed, for his own father's demise. You have this, you know, this sister out of nowhere that's basically taken over the kingdom and is slaughtering everyone. You know, these weren't like light issues to deal with, yet they seem to laugh through the whole thing.
Well, that's why I said it sounds like this is Thor dealing with some pretty heavy stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And some mourning through what is kind of his way, which is to just play it up as this epic. I mean, that was, you know, that is almost the way that every Viking story goes, you know, is that they have them tell these really immensely bloody and horrible and emotional tales by just turning them into these, you know, baldy epics, you know, and whatnot. And that was completely in keeping with it. I mean, yeah, all the destruction, you know, basically Asgard gone, you know, Odin dead, the future of the Asgardians completely in doubt, you know, it's all this stuff is really big stuff, and yet it totally takes a backseat to the tone of the film. So I think that this is definitely a must watch. I mean, obviously, I'm hoping that if you are listening this far in, you already have watched the film. Otherwise, sorry.
No, you can still go watch it. There's still a lot to this film besides the minuscule parts that we've discussed so far.
Absolutely.
But one of the things that, you know, the Marvel universe continues to do is not reset. Almost everything that they do in these films, there's repercussions for them. They don't get washed away or forgotten, and they have to continue to deal with them.
Absolutely.
Thor at the end of this is very different than the Thor that started the movie. We did spoilers, but I'll just say one more time. He gets his eye cut out. He loses his hammer. His whole uniform is now changed. His demeanor is somewhat more reserved, or at least thoughtful, I think, than what he had previously exhibited. Now that this has happened, he has a different appreciation, I think, for Asgard, for his people. Mm-hmm. Now that he's become king, which I don't think he ever really originally wanted to be.
Yeah.
And so now we have a very different hero in this case. You look at Iron Man's journey, Captain America's journey. They're all changing pretty substantially. A lot of their core values are being examined and questioned and shook around. And as we reach this point where we're coming back to the culmination where everyone's back together in this larger movie, we have a very different group of people than we had with the first Avengers movie. They've all changed significantly, and not only just mentally, but in some cases physically as well. And it's a testament to good storytelling that you don't have to reset and go back to the first iteration of the character to tell your stories, that you can move them forward and still make them relevant and important enough to tell these stories, that you're not afraid to break Thor's hammer for what seems like forever because he doesn't really need it. And, those are all important. Those are all really risky moves to make to break the existing concept of the character. And they're willing to do it, and they pulled it off quite well. At the end, I did not mind that Thor did not have his hammer, that he did not have his long hair. It wasn't important to him anymore, or to me. So, that's a good storytelling, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he is definitely changed. I like the fact that each film takes the threads of the story forward, and I think that this is definitely a knockout of the park and the best of the three Thor films, in my opinion. Certainly, it was the one that left me with the best feeling coming out of the theater. As far as I didn't sit back and go, "Hey, that was pretty good," despite blank. And it was reminiscent of the Guardians films in humor, but it still actually had its own brand of humor throughout, which I think was important. But it's interesting that it is so close to the Guardians in terms of it being more comedic, because of the fact that they essentially are in right now, at least in kind of a similar part of the galaxy, let's say, or at least the cosmos, right? So that is something, at least, that it makes sense for it to be very reminiscent, let's put it that way. Any other last thoughts for Thor Ragnarok, other than it was a knockout of the park as far as I'm concerned?
I'm trying to think. I thought they used Bruce Banner much more effectively than I expected them to. He came across very well, even when he wasn't powered up. He was a bit of comic relief in a comedic movie already, but he still sort of gave it a different flavor. Loki, I was amazed how well they integrated him into this movie. They didn't need to, and could he have not been there? Possibly, but since he was there, I thought they did a really good job of involving him in the both major and minor storylines, and at the same time, keeping true to the character, that he was still a snake at heart.
Yes, Although I do kind of like the idea that towards the end, he does seem like he's just a bit more on the side of the heroes, quote unquote. I don't know, but because you know he took the freaking Tesseract, and that's why I'm sure that ship is Thanos at the end there. And yes. I'm sure that's why he's there, is because he detected one of the Infinity Stones. Oh, and how did you like the fact that they completely fixed that whole continuity problem?
Loved it. Look, I already know what you're talking about. Yeah, that was that was a classic and well done, as we got to see the Cask of Ancient Winters, I think. Oh, yes. Was one of the things, as well as the Cosmic Cube or Tesseract. And I thought that was perfectly handled, and you know, definitely done.
Yes.
So we can move forward and still not contradict anything.
Exactly. And let's see. Beyond that, I did want to just say that Cate Blanchett as Hela was a delight of a villain. She camped up the her role very nicely.
Yes, but she skirted that campy edge, I think, very well.
Yes.
I don't feel like she dove into the camp. It just sort of accented things once in a while, which was nice, because she is meant to be a serious, a serious villain that with a lot of power. And if you made her the object of ridicule, as they did say with Loki, I don't think she wouldn't have been intimidating enough to fear or concern yourself with throughout the story. But they never let her go over the edge, so to speak, just kept her right there. And that worked for me very much. She stayed threatening throughout the entire film.
Yeah, and boy, you give Galadriel the ring and she goes goth. I can't say I mind it very much, but or at all, as the case may be. But at any rate, yeah, definitely a great MCU film. Now that covers movies.
Yes.
Now we go into TV that is streaming right now.
Yes.
And the big one that everyone's talking about right now is Stranger Things Season 2. And how many episodes did you get into this by now?
I saw the last five.
The last five?
Yes.
You didn't see the ones before that?
I watched the... No, I did not.
So wait. Oh, so there's nine episodes this season.
Uh-huh.
And you only saw episodes 5 through 9.
I'm not going to apologize for it, but yes. Okay. The family was watching it, and I came in the middle of things and just stayed. I watched the first season. Honestly, I couldn't make it past about the fourth episode. It just didn't do anything for me. And I know people love it, and I'm not faulting them for it. Ever to each their own. It just didn't hook me in any real way, shape, fashion, or form. And I saw as this sort of fame and interest about the show, the series grew. So it wasn't that I dismissed it, but it just didn't hook me in some way. And so when I started to sit down as the family was watching into episode 5, I sat down and it hooked me a lot stronger. I guess I needed to have things moving a little bit more. And
maybe, but I will say this though, I've only seen the first two episodes of this second season.
It's so really good.
we haven't overlapped yet. So
No. So eventually. Yeah, I'd also not that we didn't give spoiler notices about all things, including television shows, but I know I'll take it easy. Suffice to say, it ended in a way I didn't expect, and at the same time, I thought it ended in the way it should.
I guess.
Yeah, it was a lot of it was very enjoyable, and perhaps I'll go back and give the first season another run once more and see if maybe it'll catch my fancy this time. But from what I saw of the second season, it definitely was an improvement over the first season.
Awesome. Because I really liked the first season. So.
Yeah.
And I've liked what I've seen so far of the second season.
Yeah, and I think you'll be happy with the character development and the finishing of the story, almost, in some ways.
Well, I know that I need to get moving on it, because I need to finish that. Because coming up in just a few days is The Punisher.
Yes, yeah.
I was surprised to find that it was coming out so soon, because it just seemed to fly under the radar for me.
Yeah, it seemed like it was just approved a few months ago, but yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it's been much longer. See, time flies. And then, also, a few days after that, we have on Hulu, The Runaways.
Oh, geez, I hope they do that well.
I hope so, too. It looks good so far, but, you never know.
Yes.
Now, in the middle there, before we get into anything else, I happen to be going to, there is an inaugural con here in New York area at the Javits called Anime NYC. and it is sponsored by Crunchyroll and a few other big names. The big draw, though, is that the Full Metal Alchemist live action film is getting its U.S. premiere here at Anime NYC. And this is actually premiering in the U.S. at the con before it goes into wide distribution in Japan. So, yes, and we have tickets. So we're going to get to see the live-action FMA film before most of Japan gets to see it.
Wow.
Yes, we're quite happy about that because my daughter especially is a huge Full Metal Alchemist fan, as in she already has cosplay
Sweet.
Ready to go for the premiere. And yes, it's going to be introduced by the director himself, whose name I cannot pronounce. But yeah, we are really looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. So yeah, there is a lot happening between now and Thanksgiving here in the U.S. for content-wise. So yeah, I imagine that at least part of Thanksgiving is going to be holding up somewhere with streaming services, catching up. But it's good timing, I have to say, because as we'll find out soon, a lot of the shows that premiered in the fall are starting to wrap up. They have shorter runs, or they are hitting a fall finale, and so we are actually at a pretty good time to kind of step back and in December catch up with these shows that are coming out on streaming. So I'm sure that we will talk more about Stranger Things Part 2. We will be talking more about The Punisher in the weeks to come and Runaways as it spools out. And don't worry, you'll get my report about how the Full Metal Alchemist movie is. And in preparation, it's not on my list here of reading material, but since we're kind of segueing into reading stuff, I have been rereading the manga for Full Metal Alchemist. I am now up to volume 5. So I am prepping myself for the adaptation. Well, how about you, Gary? What have you been reading lately?
I finally caught up with some of the... I'm not sure what they're calling it in this Star Wars universe. I know it's not Legends because that's all the old stuff. So I guess it's just current stuff. I was reading the Catalyst book, which was the sort of lead up to
Rogue One. Yeah,
to Rogue One, and I really enjoyed it a lot. I've read these sort of prequel books to movies sometimes, and sometimes they fall really flat. They really don't seem to connect, and it's just somebody throwing words on a page because they can sell it for $7.99 in paperback form. But this came across really well. I was genuinely impressed with the plot line that was that they came up with to explain, you know, the sort of origins behind building the Death Star, as well as them getting Generoso's father to start working on the device, as well as Krennic's past and background. And I really felt like it informed me, which was such a pleasant surprise. I was almost sad to see it end as it spooled up closer and closer to Rogue One. You realized that it was going to come to an end, of course, but you know, I kept hoping that we'd sneak an extra week, an extra month, an extra, you know, some amount of time extra before it came to where we knew it had to end. But it didn't, and it you know, it also I'm trying to think some of the other people that helped inform me in, but I thought it was well done, and I wish I had read it before I'd seen the movie. It might have spoiled some tiny aspects of it, but in general, I have to go back now and watch Rogue One, knowing what I know, and I think I'll appreciate the movie even more.
Yeah, I think that that's true, because when I read Catalyst, I then went and watched Rogue One shortly thereafter, and yeah, it actually did add a lot of depth to some of the character relationships. And I feel like it also helped to flesh out some of the kind of like almost tossed away lines in the movie. All of a sudden became a lot more meaningful and important.
I can definitely see how that would be the case. So yeah, I'm a little late to that parade, but at the same time, I'm glad I did read it. It was quite enjoyable, and while it's not the extended universe, so to speak, it's still nice to get these extra stories about the Star Wars universe. So.
Well, yeah. I don't know what to call the new one either, because it's not really the same as what they had. So. Is it just the, you know, I don't know what they call it, because
it's
the universe, it's the Disneyverse? I don't know.
It's not the expanded, it's not the Legends, it's not because this is definitely, you know, continuity, at least current, you know, and so, I don't know. Somebody they'll probably tag it in a few more novels, and then we can go back and sneak this into the older recording of the show. But whatever it is, I'm sure I'll say it, and it'll be witty.
It's just as they are going back and retroactively adding to the canon. We'll do it to ours.
Hey, if we can find out that the Death Star was made of lightsaber crystals, then I can change a title of a book. Yes.
By the way.
Yes.
I forgot something in our little coming soon rundown. Justice League is coming out this weekend.
Oh, yes. I've heard about that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Another one of those indie films. For what I understand.
Well, I practically have Justice League Detroit over in the on the DC on the DC universe on CW. So do I need another Justice League?
That's right. That's right. I don't see the need for another one. And there's that fake Flash. Not the real one. The real one's Grant Gustin. I don't know who that other guy is.
Jeez, I'm trying to be open about that because, we've enjoyed it so much. And I'm the only part that's from what I read so far, because obviously I haven't seen anything, is that, that they're portraying him so much younger. In the in the books, Barry's already this, this forensic scientist that you feel like is probably somewhere in his 30s or something like that, and has a reasonable concept of himself, even if he is dealing with these powers, and sort of takes his powers in stride. And the idea that they're making this this new Flash a much younger Flash that – well, it would seem that could be much easily manipulated by Batman is disheartening. I'd rather see someone stand up to Batman than be sculpted, molded, and prodded, and tricked into doing things.
True.
So
we'll find out soon enough.
I'm hoping it just will
be better than Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, I don't think that'll be hard. But geez, I have to remember my insight. My inside voice just isn't worth. But I hope it's more of a Justice League than a Batman and the Outsiders. Yes. So we'll see.
Okay, so that brings us to what I've been reading. I finished The Use of Weapons, which is the third of the books in the Culture sequence by Ian Banks, and I liked the second book, A Player of Games, a lot. I think I mentioned that when I finished that book. This one I felt was tonally all over the place. There were some sections of the book that were completely absurd and comedic, and those actually really worked for me because it felt like a darker Hitchhiker's Guide almost. It was like, what if Douglas Adams was telling a story about the space CIA or something like that? And it really played well because everybody was just a little goofy. And then there were times that were like dreadfully serious that just felt a little atonal, and it didn't quite work for me. Also, there was one section, like one half of the book, it was in alternating chapters. So one set of chapters was all the present moving forward. The other set of chapters alternating was the present back to the beginning of the guy's story. So it was hard to see because I was trying to figure out, like, okay, is the alternating chapter thing supposed to mean that this is, these stories of his past are informing what we're seeing of him in the present day as he's going through this mission that he's on? And I couldn't really quite connect it all the time. And I think it was just a conceit that didn't work as well as the author thought that it would. But it wasn't quite as good to me as the second book in the sequence. But it's still a good read. It was just, I bogged down on it every so often. It took me a little longer than books usually do these days. But that's okay, because I'm still looking forward to the next book in the sequence. Next, however, is a book that I have to say, if you're out there and you were a fan of Twin Peaks, particularly the third season, and there's still things, like, you just want closure on a few things. A few things. Don't expect all of them, but a few things. Like some of the characters, knowing, how things wound up with them, because it's not entirely clear, perhaps, from the show. Twin Peaks, The Final Dossier. It's a relatively short book. It's maybe 100 pages, 120 pages, when you get all the filler out of the way. And it's not too expensive, but it is a quick read. It took me 2 days to go through. It's kind of broken up into chapters that are, one topic per chapter. So one might be about, here's Shelley's story. Here's what happened to Leo. Here's what happened to, Norma and Ed. And here's another one about, for instance, something that you didn't really hear about on the show, which is what happened to Annie Blackburn after the second season. So if you really want to kind of start filling in a lot of the blanks, go out and get Twin Peaks, The Final Dossier. I really enjoyed that, getting just a little bit more of Twin Peaks, because I'm fairly sure that The Final Dossier is, in fact, going to be the final word at this point. I really don't see more coming. And I don't know that there needs to be more. I think that things kind of wrap up and mysteries remain, but they are, it's still a good stopping point if you can kind of get a little bit of closure out of this book. So let's see. Gary, are you still there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't know if you had dropped off because it got very quiet. But yeah, okay. That's it for those things. We do have a couple news items that I wanted to go through before we wrap up this particular episode. The first one is great news. The Orville was renewed for a second season. So both Star Trek shows have now been renewed.
It's like 1997 all over again.
I know.
Oh, wait a minute. We're still at 1997. Oh, gee.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. So I'm really happy about that because it really has been this nice kind of tension between the two shows in the sense that one is taking a little bit of an irreverent nostalgic trip back into the heyday of the 90s Trek, while the other one is definitely paving new ground and challenging perhaps what it means to be Trek in some ways. And I think that the more we see of the current Discovery, which we'll talk about in the next couple episodes perhaps, I think that it's finding its voice. And the more it finds its voice, the more it is really complementary with the Orville. Even if the Orville is not an official Star Trek show, it doesn't matter. I don't know what it is, okay? So I'm really happy with it. How about you? You happy with this news?
Oh, I'm thrilled with the news. I'm loving Orville. I think they toned the humor back just enough off the slapstick to make the rest of the concept work very well. And I'm having a ball in it. You know, I try to think of, okay, you know, if the Enterprise would have went to Sector 11, this is what was happening in Sector 30. So it works very well with Star Trek. I think they're being both respectful and enjoying it at the same time, which is nice. They're not really poking fun so much as laughing along with and not too hard, so which was a complaint of some of the earlier episodes.
Yes.
So I'm thrilled that they got renewed. I haven't actually looked at any of the viewership numbers, but I think it's been fairly well received and it's getting a good viewership, which you know is warranting the renewal. So I'm happy with that. It's a nice show. I don't think that like I said, it's not being done out of spite, but out of love, and I think it's obvious that you know that. All the people involved, including several Star Trek alumni, at least on the production side, are very much involved with this series. So I think the sort of sense of Trek is definitely not only there in intention, but actually there in person, because you're getting producers, directors that did Next Generation shows, that did Voyager shows, that did Deep Space Nine episodes, all contributing in a variety of ways to enjoy telling the stories that we want to see, not just creating new stuff, but, you know, staying in the same neighborhood. You know, it's nice to take trips every once in a while, but it's nice to, you know, ride your bicycle around your own neighborhood. And that's what I feel sort of Orville's doing, while Discovery might be actually just, you know, taking a trip across. Oh, we're taking a trip overseas. Okay, let's go. Wow, this is fun and exciting. But hey, it's nice to just go out for pizza at your house, too.
Yeah,
so
that's, exactly. Yeah. Now, some late-breaking news in the last few days that I think is kind of interesting here. Amazon has commissioned gotten a multi-season deal for a Lord of the Rings prequel TV show.
I was going to say, because, you know, while most people might not even be aware of it, almost every Lord of the Rings movie has like a 4.5 to 5 hour version of itself. Okay. So we already have like 25, we already have like over a full season worth of episodes just by divvying up the original movies.
That's right.
So now you're telling me that, besides, and I'm not even counting The Hobbit, but you're telling me there's even more story now that they want to tell.
Yes, and it's not clear what this means. Is it stuff that happens between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings? Is it stuff that happens even before that? Is this their way of saying they're going to make like an anthology series of stories from, you know, if that was the Third Age, or is it going to be the First Age, you know, the Silmarillion being adapted? Who knows? But it definitely seems like there is a big commitment here, and no one's quite sure what it looks like yet.
I was going to say, we don't know if it's being shot in New Zealand. Is Weta involved? What's going on? They really didn't give us much.
Yeah, and wouldn't it be interesting if that was basically the way that the deal went, was that they have to that they have to kind of live in that universe in some way without rehashing it.
Now, how does Lord of the Rings work? Is that still considered like a protected show that you have to pay rights? Is that public use at this point? Where does that fall?
I really don't know.
I'm sort of curious.
Really curious here.
Because I almost think it'd fall under sort of like the Sherlock Holmes, where at this point it's public, it's available for fair use by almost everyone. So I'm sort of curious at this point, where does Lord of the Rings fall in? I mean, I remember Jackson getting permission, some sort of permission from somebody, or at least some sort of nod of approval. But I don't know, is there actual contracts that you have to sign with people for rights to that anymore? Or are they protected by the Disney Superman clause where, forever he's incorporated?
I'm curious of how they're going to pull this off and if maybe they weren't allowed to do the same material that was already on screen and that's why they're doing it this way. It's really hard to tell. So I'm curious. I mean, let's face it. We're at least going to give it a shot.
Yes.
But we'll see if it works at all. Any other things that you wanted to bring up before we wrap this up and go into episodic discussion next time?
No, I think I'm good for now.
Okay, so am I. So we're going to go ahead and wrap this episode up. And when we come back next time, it will be, as I mentioned, the beginning of episodic discussion. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.